radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take, then you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton, your host and facilitator for the program. We started off today's show with a message in the music from Leon Thomas. The Creator has a master plan, and that sets the stage for our guest, a very good friend of mine, Sumaya Shakur, also known as Helen Blue. She's a writer, former editor. She's a former talk show host. She's also a Reiki master, and she's a cultural impresario, and she's worked to produce the annual Heal Thyself Garden Party in Philadelphia, as well as the upcoming 12-21-12 Come Party with the Gods consciousness celebration for the solstice. And we'll speak with her following these messages, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Greetings to the Internet Radio family. This is Reverend Valentine speaking. You know, for nearly 30 years, I have had the distinct experience of being interviewed over every medium of communication available to the public. And except for the metaphysical underground, I can think of no other electronic venue that has been more progressive, more innovative, more insightful, more diligent, more diverse in its demographics, and more courageously supportive of the truth than this ever-growing phenomenon called Internet radio. And this is precisely why I'm here to tell you that it is so vital that you give your wholehearted support to it. Tell a friend. In fact, tell 2, 3, and 4 of your friends. If you are a business owner, support Internet radio by telling your customers and constituents all about it. Let them know that there is a legitimate and important substitute to all of the prefabricated, super-sensitive garbage polluting our public airways today. Don't allow the mass media to continue to treat you like a mindless consumer drone. Enhance your awareness. Indulge your critical thinking, your reasoning, and your analysis. Do as I do. Log on, listen in, and then let it be known all about your internet radio experience. Chimatep, beloved family, thank you for listening. Walk in light.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now there is also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Messiah. Our guest is Helen Blue, also known as Sumaiya Shakur, who is a writer. She's a PR professional. She's a Reiki master. She's an impresario of plays and culture. And she's a genuine Renaissance sister. And I had the pleasure of working with her and under her, as she was an editor at one of the papers that I wrote for many years. And so we go way back. I'm really one of her fans in terms of her writing, what she does for the community. She does a lot of work for grassroots organizations. She does a lot of work for nonprofits, politicians. And she's one of the good people who is not going to rip you off, who's not going to talk down to you, who's not going to take advantage of you, and who will give you her best effort every time out. So I want to say that up front and then welcome you to the program. How you doing, sister?
I'm so well, and it's such a beautiful day. So that really just really makes it good to be speaking with you and today and sharing some of our ideas and things with your listeners.
Well, you know, also, I neglected to say one time you were a one-time talk show host on WURD, so that's in it too.
That was a lot of fun, and that was back in the day when we were all just moving around, and you and I were working together on a regular basis. It was just a real upbeat period in my life when that was going on, and we moved on to other things, but. It was still a great venture for me then, and a journey as my life continues to be.
Well, unlike myself, you were in the quote-unquote mainstream media for quite some time. And so
yes.
What's your take on what's happening with media, conventional media, and then alternative media now? You know, not just mainstream media like the Inquirer and the Daily mm-hmm. News, but also from the black press perspective, because a lot of the papers we wrote for are no longer in existence.
Absolutely. It really is leaving such a void. The Philadelphia New Observer, where I was editor for many years, and you were one of my people that contributed on a regular basis. We depended on your insight and your copy. Things like that, there are fewer and fewer, and they're leaving such a gap. I continue to get people coming up to me and asking me, telling me that they miss the paper, they miss our point of view, and that the institutions that speak to African Americans or just people who are interested in culture, in just not the mainstream of everything, a different take, sort of second-day story on stories, how it's going to actually affect your life. These kinds of papers and magazines and shows, even on the radio, are just fewer and fewer, and we're poorer for it. I remember working for the mainstream media, and people used to, really think, I had a lot of power and it was just such an important job to work for the mainstream media. And in reality, I had no power. And all I could do much of the time was, just do the best I could. But I could never say, I want to cover this or how about this. I had to always go and present the story and sell them on it. And many times they just didn't get it. And so that was a continual struggle for me. And it gave you a bird's eye view on just how slanted stories that appear in the mainstream media can be, and how they really don't tell our perspective in ways that the people that actually put the paper together, they don't even realize it themselves. You see, in mainstream media, the reporters, they see things, and many of them are good people who genuinely feel they're doing the best they can. But we grow up with our own individual prejudices and slants on things that affect everything we see and everything we do. And so their stories are written from a European perspective. And it's just the way it is. And they can't understand an African-centered perspective. And so it never fits in. That's why our black-owned media was so important and is continues to be important, but it is fading, and I just fear that one day it's just going to be something that we're going to remember. But at an African-American-owned paper, we wanted to look at things that we're never going to get in the mainstream press. I had even politicians used to come to me and say, I've never been on the front page of the Daily News or the Inquirer, and I've been in public service for 20, 30 years and have done X, Y, and Z. But the only time they wanted to put them on the front page is if something negative had happened. And that was what we did as members of the black press and that you continue to do in the papers that you work for. And hopefully I will be able to do it again in another venue. So I really do miss it, and I really, really can't express how important it is in this critical time.
Well, one time you weren't you talking about reviving not the New Observer, but having your own paper, like a neighborhood paper or something? You were working on a magazine.
Well, I have. I would love to do that. And I guess what I was trying to get the idea of community newspapers. Come from venues like some nonprofits that would be available to people in smaller communities that would serve as a community newspaper. In other words, it would be able to take a closer look at events that were happening in their community and be presented in a way that was, you know, well-written and well-thought-out and well-put-together, because that was always my main thing why should, you know, the things that you read in, say, community papers or minority-owned papers be not, just not put together as I just wanted them to be, reach a certain level of proficiency and, you know, really tell the story and really get the facts straight and really get an understanding of what was going on. So that was what I was trying to do in terms of get some nonprofits that would have the money to do it and could get the community support to serve as, to fill the void that was missing from, like, the mainstream papers, African-American papers, that were clearly going out of business and not being able to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And even mainstream papers are not what they used to be, and they cover less and less in the community because they just don't have the resources. So there have been a number of papers that they're mostly national that are online, like the Root.com and the Griot.com, that continue to carry African-American news. But there's nothing that I know of locally that's doing it. Do you know of anything?
No, because and most of them run into the wall about if they're truly activists and they're truly African-centered, they can't get the advertising. Or they're so small they don't have the staff to go out call the neighborhood for the type of support. The only person that I knew that, you know, Tyree Johnson does a good job. He still does a good job.
Yes, he does.
And then Henry was trying, but I haven't seen him around, so I don't know what's going on with him.
Right, yeah. The other examples that you just mentioned of potential ways for you to get alternative news, let me put it like that, or alternative perspectives. But there's such a fine line of being able to be an activist, a community-oriented paper, and still be able to attract mainstream viability. And that's the trick. That's a tricky trick. I think that the New Observer was, like, pretty good at walking that line. The New Observer newspaper, which was a paper in Philadelphia that went out of business about 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. And that's a hard trick, so...
Well, but again, you know, you had a whole staff of people who went out to get advertising,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
We were the more cutting edge paper, the more accepted cutting edge paper. There were some niche papers Like mm-hmm. Terry Johnson's papers were niche papers because mm-hmm. I wrote for him and I edited one of them, but mm-hmm. they didn't have the readership that the New Observer had, and certainly they didn't have the advertising support
right.
that the New Observer had. So that is the big challenge, and it's been the challenge, as you know, since Freedom's Journal back in 1827
right.
or whatever it was.
You're right. Yeah. That has always been the challenge, and we had our heyday during the civil rights period when mainstream papers realized they couldn't cover these civil rights stories in the African American community, and the African American papers really did provide that service and that information. But you know, many of the fine top-notch reporters that worked for those papers back in those days, they got recruited in regular mainstream
right.
media.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
it's been difficult to recover, you know, or impossible to
right.
recover.
Right, right, right. And then, too, I think
that is
one of the challenges has been, like you said, the New Observer was cutting edge enough that we could talk about the critical issues, but at the same time, folks, we had enough human or community interest in it that it
mm-hmm.
was appreciated even by the folks that weren't that deep and weren't really
right.
into that
right.
political or social or spiritual consciousness, but
right.
we did enough that it was something for everybody.
Right, and it did have its loyal following, and with its departure, unfortunately, nothing else has, you know, really reached out to fill its space like it did. I mean, there are other black-owned papers around, don't get me wrong, you know, but I do think nobody worked that niche like the New Observer did.
What's yeah. your take on, you mentioned the Internet. I mean, early on, I was involved with the Black World Today, and it was because it was new back in the early 2000, late 99, early 2000, it was new. Since then, there have been a plethora of websites that have come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had mainstream publications like
right.
AOL fronting black, so-called black
mm-hmm.
websites. And so now, even that, that's pretty much demise now. So it's just, there's a lot more out there, but it doesn't seem to be as, I guess the other thing is the with the advent of the blogs, because I think I started blogging about
mm-hmm.
7 years ago, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so that took off. But even that has gone through various changes. So a lot of the websites and the portals that I used to contribute to, some of them have gone out of business, or they've changed into something else.
It's a business wise, it's just very tricky, and it really is a part of our culture as a whole that is suffering, and the importance of being able to put things down on paper and to put things in significant detail so that you really understand a story, or like if you think back to, like, what did that say? You're able to go back and pick it up and look at it again. We're losing that with the advent of the 24-hour news cycle on television and the cable news, and that's where people are getting their news, and the blurb headlines that come on your cell phones, on the
mm-hmm,
iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that is generally how I hear a breaking story now. It'll come up on my smartphone, and I'll say, oh, that's going on, you know, and you'll be able to read a little piece about it. And it all has its challenges.
Yeah.
And so it's just a dying art, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I don't even know if they teach it the same way in college, because this...
They can't. They can't.
Yeah, it's... Right.
I mean...
So I don't know...
That for... It seems to have died down a bit, because at one point there was this big animosity and enmity between the bloggers and the paid, so-called paid journalists, but
mm-hmm.
now the corporatist mind control people, then now they have their own blog, so people can go and they can continue to spew out their propaganda. But
right.
I mean, several years
mm-hmm.
ago, I mean, it was like almost people would come to blows about, well, I'm a professional because you got paid. And my thing is, yeah, well, prostitutes are professionals. Also,
right.
And a lot of you guys are nothing more than prostitutes. But
Right. Or, you know, just it's not really news anymore, or even what they call earned news. Because if you're writing for a company or you, it's not even, there's no attempt for it to even be balanced or at least present both sides of the story. It's just, you know, like you said, corporate, just whatever, corporate lies just spewed out without any rebuttal.
Well, but to be realistic, we didn't subscribe to the objective thing. We were presenting black life.
Well, you're absolutely right. Well, let me be careful how I say this, because I'm not trying to say that we were not objective. We just presented clearly, proudly, from a black perspective. So, in other words, in my stories, I know I always would present two sides, but I also knew from experience that there was a way you could focus on certain kinds of things that would allow you to see what would be the important things for the African-American community to remember about an event. I used to do, like, workshops on that kind of thing, where I would actually take stories that had come from the mainstream and stories that were written in the black press and show you how completely different mm-hmm. the stories were, yeah. but the facts were the same.
Yeah.
But it was just how you were able to perceive it. What was important to the African-American community about some stories was not important in mainstream community. And I'm not negating mainstream media. I think you do need it, but it's important to have a total picture of things and for African-Americans to realize that your perspective and interest is different in many respects. And
well,
you need to at least be aware of it, or you won't know when you're being fooled.
Right. But, I mean, even because I remember when Terry started the business review, and his goal was to have a entrepreneurial paper and a business paper for people of color. Well, he partnered with the guy who does Aldea, the Hispanic
yes.
newspaper,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted
to thriving.
Yeah, you just beat me to the punch. Number one, mm-hmm. I have now are they not there? So they're thriving, but when he went to the Koreans, they said, we don't need you. We got our own paper. We have a daily paper.
Right, daily.
Yeah, so one of their guys, Mr. Park, he used to write for us, but they had no need to partner with us because they had a daily newspaper. And
mm-hmm.
in the interim, since the demise of the Business Review, Aldea is thriving, and I think they produce another paper now.
I'm sure. Aldea, you know, very healthy. They've got a viable communications tool dedicated to the interests of their community, and they don't depend on ads from big corporations
right,
to stay
right,
afloat.
Right.
They have enough businesses and subscribers and people that support it to just be to have the independence that it takes to put out a paper like that and for it to really mean something in the community.
Mm, and so do the Koreans, you know.
Oh, yes, the Koreans also. The Koreans even more so. They got, like you said, a daily paper. And they have a strong business community
right.
that supports
right.
it with mm-hmm. ads.
Yep.
And, you know, yep. so it's just everything feeds into everything else, you know. And unfortunately, we're just deficient in a number of those areas, so we continue to have to, you know, depend on big corporations and their ads and their minority, what do they call the minority budget?
Yeah,
you can't even,
yeah.
you know,
urban,
in order, you know, we just
budget,
automatically
yeah.
give X amount of dollars to minority papers, but you can't ever get into the real budget where the big money is spent.
Well, the only ones who were willing to do that, and to our credit, for the most part, we didn't use them, were the cigarette ads and to some degree the alcohol. Because I know Terry refused to take the money.
Right.
And I applauded him for it.
Right. And a number of black papers will do, no, we cannot, that is too pervasive a problem for us to support that, to encourage it in any kind of way. Because we didn't do that either. Take cigarette ads or I don't believe you did liquor ads. Do you remember?
No, I think maybe every now and then they might do a cigarette ad, but they didn't, New Observer didn't do alcohol.
Right. And, you know, it may be something where I can remember things like maybe Anheuser-Busch would have something.
Yeah, that for the Black History thing, yeah.
Yeah, things like that, but it wouldn't actually be about their actual alcoholic product. It would be about a program or something that they were doing, you know, within the community. So,
but in there was a point while you were still doing the newspaper and you were still doing your PR, you became real involved in alternative or holistic or complementary medicine.
Right.
What brought that on? And because I'm going to use that as a segue to talk about Reiki.
Right. Okay. I was, as most people who end up getting into maybe alternative medicine or, you know, herbs and that kind of thing, they have a health challenge, and they, you know, you become frustrated with the results that you're getting from conventional health things, and then you start looking for other things to do. And that's kind of basically, I mean, it was just that simple. I was having issues with high blood pressure, and, like, none of the medicine seemed to be really doing the trick. And I just had this instinctive thing. I just didn't want to continue to take copious amounts of medicine that I could really see were making chemical
long-term
in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, long-term effects. And, you know, it's a proven fact that that's what happens. I mean, and they know it when they give it to you. They got 20 years before this is going to start breaking something else down in the body. So it was that kind of a challenge that just started me out on a simple mission to just try some other kinds of things. And what happens is you go out and you think, well, I'm going to take an herb, and I'm going to take these herbs, and I'm going to take these vitamins, and that's going to help. But along the way, you find out that you can't just do it that way, that it really doesn't work that way, that herbs and vitamins and natural remedies don't work the same way as conventional medicines work. So you can't just exchange, like, an aspirin for a certain herb take it the same kind of way. And then you find out, well, you can't, like, do, I'm going to take all these good, healthy drinks this morning, but I'm going to go home for dinner and I'm going to have, you know, a fat-laden diet with fried pork chops and, you know, and eat all of that and think that you're going to be okay. So gradually, the more you learn, the more you begin to change your lifestyle. And it is a slow process. I mean, you don't do it all at once. But or you can do it deep, which is what I did. I just jumped in head first, and all of a sudden, you know, I was just eating totally different. And once your mind begins to clear out from all the chemicals and all of that things, you begin to think differently, and so you begin to treat yourself differently and live in a different way. And you begin to realize that wellness and being healthy is so much more than just taking something. Or even just eating something, you have to begin to live a certain way. You have to create certain kinds of environment in your home to allow yourself to live its fullest life. I mean, and so as you begin to do all these things, you change. You just change. Your interests change. And as, you know, at the paper, I just began to include more things that that said that in as many ways as I could. one of the things, and I know you are very big into this, that one of the biggest things is cultural. And people could say, what does that have to do with wellness or health, you know, your culture? But you know that understanding your cultural and feeling good about yourself and your culture is almost the number one thing you have to do to attain good health. Everything else is, when you feel negative and poorly mm-hmm. about yourself, it affects the way you feel, it affects your outlook, it affects how you function. And so as it becomes a lifestyle, I mean, I was just fascinated with the whole thing about how herbs can make such a difference, and then later on, you know, about how lifestyle began to change and then how spirit becomes involved, and you begin to learn, well, that's actually the first thing, how you ultimately relate to the universe and its good energy, and how you learn to reap that abundance for yourself, bring it into yourself and believe in that abundance that's inside.
But one of the things I noticed was that as you were going to, through, start to align yourself with like-minded people, because I remember you were doing a lot of things with Dr. Bodice and his community, and then mm-hmm. it almost became like a campaign to make the community aware of not only the changes that you were going through, but also the benefits of these changes. I mean, it wasn't, you know, you weren't beating people over the head with it, but at the same time, you were looking at it and looking at the pathologies in our community and saying, mm-hmm. hey, if you do this, you can probably eliminate some of these categories where we're leading the city and the nation in terms of disease.
Well, I began to, you realize you have to, I'm just so grateful to just be, you know, in this particular space and to be living in a life that's with abundance and understanding how blessed I am every day, you know, to get up and how miracles occur in my life all the time. And things that people don't consider miracles are miracles. They're just blessings for you, you know, and life lessons. So I began to align myself with people and live a lifestyle and present events and things that would also bring these people together. I mean, at first it almost started out these are the kind of things I would want to do, you know, that I would want to go to. I would want to go to a place where you would have healthy food, but food that was delicious, that you would want to eat, that you would like to eat,
mm-hmm.
To hear some information that will just enlighten you, to give you some new information for you to put in your head and move around and then begin to have the information make a difference in how you live your life and how you deal with yourself and with other people and what a difference that makes, because you can look at life with a negative attitude and be a Scrooge all day long, all year long. And you can look at that same incident and look at it with love and gratitude, and you're a whole different person. Like when my mother began to develop Alzheimer's, it just annoyed me so much, because she would be forgetting and and it was just driving me crazy. And I would say, oh, you know, this is just too much, you know. And then I was driving down the street, and this thought just came to me, and it said, well, what if your mother is forgetting? Your mother really is forgetting. And, you know, it's a privilege for you to take care of your mother. It's a privilege. And when that thought came over me, it just changed. She was doing the same things, but it no longer
mm-hmm,
bothered
mm-hmm,
me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was. I just saw it as just something I could give to my mother, to this woman that had given me life and had raised me. This was my gift to her. And it was absolutely no problem for me to deal with her after that. It was just a loving thing to do. And those are the kinds of things that often come about when people are exposed to environments that are fueled by love and by energy, good energy, and if they learn, like, certain tools that can that will allow them to experience these kinds of things, their lives become better. And it's a slow process, but if people can come somewhere and have a good time, have something to eat, listen to some inspirational, nice, and I don't mean like spiritual music, but music that's uplifting, that talks about, you know, just positive kinds of things, you will go out of there feeling better about yourself, about what you're going to do. And, yeah, you know what, I can start making these changes in my lifestyle. I can substitute this vegetable for this starchy food, or I can, you know, maybe I'll have a vegetarian burger instead of having a, you know, a fried meat burger with cheese on it, you know. And these changes add up. I mean, it's never too late to start being better, you know.
Yeah.
And it all starts somewhere, you know. It all starts somewhere.
Well, I had wanted to talk about Reiki, but since you talked about you got into your involvement with the promotions and with the Heal Thyself Garden Party and other venues like that, you have something coming up shortly. You're calling it the Come Party with the Guys 12/21/12.
Right.
So tell us about that, and what's the significance of that? I mean, I know I have some idea, but tell us what the significance.
To add to this, because it's a simple thing, but sometimes it's not easy for people that don't like just think on those levels, or people that have not yet learned how to see themselves as an integral part of the entire universe.
Right. And well, they just haven't been exposed to it. I mean, yeah.
Right. Right. Of things that are happening in the universe, you are an intricate and important and beloved part of it, you know. So we come to this part of the year, which is a sacred part of the year for many, many people of the globe. One of the, and you might remember this, Judy, and say, even in the New Observer, this part of the year was, you know, people do Christmas and Kwanzaa, and, you know, the Hebrew people, Jewish people do Hanukkah. But it really, in nature, the big part is the solstice.
Right.
The solstice is the time of year when the earth is in slumber, is in meditation. The trees, you know, the trees are leafless, and everything is not dead, but it's in a sleep. It's in a resting period. And so if we all are trying to, like, live our lives in harmony with nature, and if what's going on in the worldview, the universal view, then we know that this is a time for introspection and for thought and for thinking about how you want to sow your seeds for the new year. This is where you plant them in yourself so that you will be able to bring them out in the spring and they'll bear fruit, you know, later on. So the solstice is one part of the event, which is to celebrate, and this happens every year. And I remember we used to write in the New, I'm sorry, I missed that point, write in the New Observer, this is also the solstice time. And I used to talk about the things that people could do or you could do to help acknowledge the solstice. But this year is particularly important because it's 2012. And people have been talking about 2012 and its cataclysmic results, and the world is going to end, and da 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 da, and on all this negative kind of stuff, and making fun, and blah blah blah. But I mean, actually, it's just the end of the Mayan calendar. The Time Masters, they were the best calendar makers ever. You know, they made these calendars that foretold all kinds of events that were coming around in the universe, and this particular time is the end of the Mayan calendar. And
well, it's the end of that particular cycle. That's
right.
That's really what
you're
it means.
Right. The right. End. That's right. The end of that particular cycle. And so, what does that mean? That means that it's time for us to start. That calendar starts to move back. In other words, if time is divided into golden ages, which are times of vast peace and tranquility, knowledge, advancement, people able to really live like the enlightened beings that we are, doing and seeing each other in a light that is divine, that's a golden age. And then, you know, you have a silver age where you kind of lose a little bit. Then there's the a bronze age. And then there's a dark age where we're just living totally at odds with nature and have placed our importance on material things and things that have no meaning in the natural world. And that's kind of where we are right now. So this end of the Mayan calendar and this segment of it means that this is the end, and now we're going to begin to move back in the other direction. We're going to begin to go back to a golden age. But for reasons that are just too complicated to even get into now, time is speeding up. So it's not going to take us another so many thousands of years to get back. It's speeded up. And you might have noticed yourself how things like, wow, this is happening fast. And we are. We're just moving, moving so much faster. And so what this means is there is an opportunity that there's going to be there's going to be an opportunity for people to begin to recognize higher senses.
Right. The higher frequencies, the higher vibrations.
Higher frequencies.
Depending on how you learn or how you receive, because everybody is slightly different.
Different.
You're going to be aware on some level of things that you might have thought about in the past, but you're going to be more attuned and it's going to be more acute.
Right, yeah. Right. And you're going to instinctively understand things better. For some reason, things that didn't really make sense to you before make sense now. Or you begin to see things, as I would always say, through love. Like if you do all your actions based on love, like you do it lovingly, your outcome is going to be different than what you've been doing. And that opportunity is just going to be here. And that is what we mean by the end of the Mayan calendar and bringing in a new golden age. So you might say, well, my goodness, that sounds like a real complicated, long, and boring event. But actually, it's not. We just want people who feel or believe that this is the way that we're going, acknowledge that there is this opportunity for us. These like-minded people are going to be together at a place, and we're going to have, like, high-level gourmet food, that high-energy foods that are good for you, that taste delicious, that will give you energy and the motivation to physically take on this challenge and this opportunity to get the best out of it. We're going to have entertainment from people who from different genres, because as you said before, people, you know, feel things differently. People that do jazz, there's a jazz person that Khadija Renee. There's a new age artist, her name is Nawal. She sings songs, she has visions, and her songs talk about the new visions that will result in this shift in how the universe sends out its vibrations. And we're going to have Coco Soul, who is an international songstress who comes with four, and she sings all kinds of world music. And all of these are coming together. We started out with a lecture, the lecture that's called Love is on the Way, the Legacy of the Pyramids, revealed in 2012. And that's a lecture that will talk about the many things that are happening, astrology in the sky, because it's not only something you might believe, but there are going to be physical manifestations of this time taking place, but also to show that we'll be going, as they would say, back to the future. The last golden age was at the time of Kemet, back when in ancient Egypt, when the pyramids were built. And so the lecture talks about the kinds of culture that existed then, the kinds of principles and things that they lived off of. It says we can't imagine what they did back in those. We have no understanding of how they did it because we are not working with the tools that they had. You know, I don't mean physical tools. I mean the mental and emotional tools they had. They were working with a composite of 360 senses. I mean, we work with five. You know, hear, smell, touch, see, you know. They worked with 360. So the kinds of things that they were able to do are almost unimaginable, although we see the results in the pyramids, you know, and in the kinds of great things of learning and healing that they had. It's their was their cosmic consciousness. In other words, they did things for the betterment of the community. Their whole lives were dedicated to being a better person so that everybody in the community could benefit from this goodness, you know. And so the lecture talks about that, which will set the tone for us to, at 12 o'clock, have our meditation, which will, you know, when the actual time for the calendar ends, we will be allowing ourselves to access this new great energy that will be available to us, to everybody.
Right. When is this going to take place?
This is going to take place on the 21st of December at Cafe Mills, in, right off of, it's Green Street and Upsall Street. It's a, you know, just a beautiful venue. They always serve high energy foods. I mean, most of it is vegetarian, but not all of it. They do have ways that they prepare, like chicken. I mean, they're not going to, you know, have like red meat or anything, but we do chicken and things like that for people who are making their way into a changed diet, or who people who just like that, you know, as seafood, fish, you know, those kinds of things. But that will be that event. So it's we call it a party with the gods, because our purpose is to present people with the opportunity to start recognizing the divinity in themselves. So if we party with the gods, if you believe in the God inside you, that divine space inside you, then actually we're partying with each other. Because we're party, that's what the party with the gods is for, you know. It's
well, I mean, you know, there are, because of the energy, there are more and more people who are embracing that, but there's still some people who are caught in the old paradigm, and they view that as heresy. and they're just not ready yet, but eventually they will, you know.
There are some people who are just not ready to it. They're just not. I mean, I was in a situation where I was working with a population of people and who were having all kinds of difficulties, you know, with their lives, you know, and you've worked with this population before, Jenny, some people who are incarcerated and tied up in that mentality, and I would say, oh, all I'm going to do is just give these people love. I'm going to show them respect. And they were, I really found that there are absolutely some people who are unable to receive it. They would just, you know, not, you know, no.
Yeah, well, a lot of them view that as weakness, you know.
You're absolutely right. But it's like, it's okay, because I've learned that everybody has their journey, and that's just where that person is. And they are, my experience is no more valid or important than theirs. And I have to respect that that's where they are and allow them to live their life and as they move forward.
Well, the other thing, too, is that you have to embrace them as teachers for you. And hopefully at some point in their development, they will recognize that you were a teacher that came into their life for any particular reason.
Well, the part about the teaching is that they are so important to you because they are giving you an opportunity to show your light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody can come up to you and be negative, and you still are able to show love and light and compassion, then that's just giving you an opportunity to be gracious. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing. So it's always that transference. So for people who they feel that they're not ready, that's fine. But they could have a nice time anytime anyway, if they like the.
Well, like now, so this is going to be on the 21st of December.
At
64, because I'm looking at something you sent me, 6460 Green Street.
Right, that's at Green and Upsall.
Okay, is there a place that they can get more information? You got a website? Or is there
they can look at a website. The website is www.phillyaces.com. www.phillyaces.com. And they will be having an opportunity to see the entire schedule of events. They'll also have an opportunity to buy tickets, which are $35. That's a dinner, concert, and a dance party, and delicious high-level food, gourmet food. And we're also having some vendors on the first floor, and so they'll be able to, you know, shop. Mm-hmm. And
now you also have a lecture, right?
Yeah, the lecture is first. The lecture is called "Love Is on the Way." The Pyramid Legacy revealed in 2012.
Okay.
It takes us from the pyramid ages up till now, and how that all plays out in our daily life.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people that, because I've written a trilogy of articles, commentaries that go on, that will go, some have gone to the blog already, and some will come in the next couple of days about that. And it's everything that you're saying in terms of the so-called Mayan prophecies, the Age of Aquarius, people call it the quantum shifts, you're going to see more and more of it. Is just that the workers of ISFIT, the people who want to keep us dumbed down and ignorant, they want to try to make it like it's a doomsday scenario. Like people should be afraid, because that's how they manipulate people, is to keep them in a fear and shame based environment. So come out to Party with the Gods on December 21st. Which is the solstice. And the other thing is our ancient ancestors understood, when we talked about cyclical or spherical evolution, the solstice, from an astronomical standpoint, is where the sun appears. If you're in a certain parts of the globe, the sun appears to almost go retrograde on the horizon. They equated it to death. Just like you said in the beginning, the winter. But then they noticed a couple of days later, it came back up, and it made an ascension into the heavens. And that's the symbolism of all of this. And from an astrological point, which is astronomy is strictly the material viewing of the heavens. That's what, the Western people, the Europeans are good at. Astrology is looking at the heavens and understanding the spiritual and psychic ramifications
really
of that, and how it can be used in our personal lives. So you're going to hear all of this that day, that evening, at that concert.
See, and it's no accident that that this particular day ends on the solstice. It's no accident.
Mm-hmm.
No accident. Mm-hmm. The Mayan calendar ends. The stars are in this unique configuration of alignment, and the clock begins to move in another direction on the solstice. The beauty of how the universe works.
More as we open up and become more receptive, we're beginning to feel or be aware of the vibrations and the energy, and that's one of the things that they're saying. Not only are the planets and the stars in alignment, but there's a certain energetic shift on the planet and in the universe, and we're feeling it because the universe is alive and the universe has its own pulse, because we're all emanations of the Creator. So, and like you said, we're all gods. We're all expressions of the One. And so as more and more of us become aware of that, we will be, and I'm saying, tempted to either stay in the old way that we're in, the strictly materialistic way and the dog-eat-dog way, or to move to what you're talking about is the love and awareness and the self-appreciation, because once you appreciate yourself, we can begin to do what all the great religions said, love thy neighbor as yourself.
That's right. You know? Absolutely. And all the great religions say that. I mean, the truth is the truth. I don't care how you say it, what language you say it in, it means the same thing.
Yep.
Because it's more than just a word. It's just a vibration inside
you. And it's true. It's the reality. Because your neighbor is yourself. I mean, that's what they were trying to tell you, you know.
Right. But we've misinterpreted.
Yep.
Now it's out here. We're going to reinterpret things and begin living in truth. And we look at December the 21st as a beginning time. Not, you know, it's not the time. It's the beginning. So we're going to begin to go into this new cycle. And we just wanted to acknowledge that and have people of like minds who felt like they wanted to acknowledge it with other people to come together and do so. So we got together to got the event together.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but, you know,
I've been
also chatting. Events like this are happening all over the world.
Right, all over the world. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, if
in fact, there's some
like
people making pilgrimages to the Mayan pyramids down in Mexico.
Right, and they're having a concert down there by McCarthy, Paul McCarthy, doing a concert.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At right there on the steps of that pyramid, Chichen Itza, I think it is.
Okay.
And so it's going on all over the world. So we are a part of a global celebration.
Now, one of the things I discovered recently is that you're a Reiki master, and I've been trying to get you on the program to talk about Reiki, because I discovered it a couple of years ago, and a friend of mine was very ill, terminally ill, and I was doing some reading on it. So I was wondering, he's getting bombarded with all this radiation. Wonder if there's some positive energy that could go into. And I discovered Reiki, and I was able to, I guess through intuition and reading, I never had an attunement. I've had some treatments in the past. I've never had an attunement myself, but I was able to, I could feel the energy, the tingling in my fingers, because I know how to do some other things. But I was able to do that to him, and I'm believing that it helped make his transition more peaceful. So, but it's not just for that. It's also a way to heal. So what is Reiki, and why is it so important?
Well, it's simplest form to explain. Reiki is a healing act that which you equate like with the laying of hands, and it allows it's like the laying of hands on a person to and allow the light or the healing energy of the universe to come through you as a vessel and to pass into the body of the person who is seeking the help. It's just in the church. I mean, people do Reiki all the time and don't know they're doing it.
In fact, I believe some of the stories in the Bible are actually indications of the principle of Reiki. Say, you know, when the lady touched Yeshua's garment, you know, just his energy just made her.
And that's what it was. I always say, like in my classes when I start, you know, I tell you know, Jesus was a Reiki master. But he was vibrating on such a high and such a pure level that he could manifest these miracles. And what it is we all have that innate ability to do so, but we don't vibrate on the level that he vibrates, so we cannot manifest those kinds of miracles. But we can manifest our own, and some of them are pretty miraculous.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But I think, you know, part two, you know, you're talking about vibrating is also the consciousness and your intent. And if you have a consciousness of a love and your intent and your intention is love, then it's going to be higher. And we're just, most of us aren't there yet.
Right. And that's the most important thing in Reiki, is the intention. You know, the first thing that I would teach Reiki students is it's all about intentions. Before you start, you have to set your intention. What is it that I'm trying to do? You have to call on the light of the universe. And when you call on the light of the universe, that's all that's going to come. And you're calling on this universal intelligence to come through you, and you're directing it into the body that needs to be healing. It's an intelligent force, so you don't have to tell it where
to
go.
Right, right. You don't. You can't tell it where to go.
Right, because it's going to go where it's needed the most. And it may not be what you think it is or even what the person thinks it is, because it's going to go to the source and to the heart of the pain or the place of discomfort. Like, you may say, oh, I have a pain in my head, but the source may be from some malfunctioning other part of the body. So you may place your hands on the head, but the energy is going to go where it's needed the most. I mean, I've seen things that have happened where I put my hands on somebody, and the thing you have to remember, it is not going to do any harm no matter what happens. You cannot do harm because your intention, you stated that. You know, I'm doing good. I'm helping this person. Give me the light for the universe, for the purpose of healing. And that's all that can be done. And so I put my hand on her. I was on one knee, and she was having this. She said, oh, it's like fire. It's like fire. It's in my other knee. And she was making me for a minute, like, waver, like, you know. But I kept saying, no, no, you can do no harm. Well, it comes to find out the next day that she had a boil in that other knee or some kind of inflammation. And that's why it was heating up. And it allowed her that inflammation to escape, like, the next day, and her pain went away. But that was, I mean, I was on a whole nother side of her body. But that energy went where it knew it was needed the most. And
we'll talk about the fact that it is the life, these are my words, I don't know whether the Reiki vocabulary or jargon is the same. I'm saying that it is, you said it's intelligent, it's energy, and it's power. It is the God force itself coming through the person who's the practitioner is merely a medium or a channel, a vessel to help unblock or to build up the person where their resistance or their life energy is out of balance.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's how you describe it. And, you know, some people call this energy chi. You know, it's like we talked before, people call the thing differently based on their culture.
Right, right.
And their environment. And that's the same way Reiki is. When you teach Reiki, everybody teaches it different, because everybody has another value. But everybody has to have a spiritual practice and a spiritual value to base it on. But people, some of my students, their spiritual, practice is maybe different from mine, but it's just as strong. You know, and so they would teach their classes differently. They would use different kinds of examples, but it's all the same. That laying on of hands, or you don't have to lay on of hands.
Yeah, well, some techniques you just hold it over about an inch or so above the surface.
You're right. You don't have to put it on the skin. You can lay it on, or you don't even have to be in the same room or the same place, because you can send it mentally. You know, you're just able to visualize that person, and you send that, you direct that energy to go where it needs to go. And it, you learn as a Reiki practitioner, you know, there are certain exercises and things that you can use to help you guide it there, you know. But basically, it knows what it's supposed to do. I mean, you're just there. That's why children are great Reiki masters, because they are
because they're not
clearer
skeptical.
And
yep.
purer than
yep.
you are,
yeah.
you know.
And they're not skeptical, and they're not whining
right.
about life and beaten down, you know, like most
and
adults
And they
are.
Believe that they could do it, and they're wonderful Reiki people. And I've had, you know, I've given children attunements, and and they're Reiki people now. They can give treatments to themselves and to other people. And it's just which is also a way of life. I'm telling you, you just learn these things are a way of life. If you are living the life of a Reiki man, you're living a certain kind of way. You're living in a certain kind of harmony. You know, you're directing your thoughts in a positive way because you learn. That's how you heal. That's how you send
right.
that energy.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so,
there are more and more people, more and more people of African ascent into Reiki now, but it's still not that well known. So can you give a contact number, or do you have a website where you talk about your practice, or you can give some information about Reiki? Because like many things, it's been repressed and suppressed,
mm-hmm.
which allows us to continue to stumble through the world blindly and being able to be duped and tricked into so many other things, where this is real.
You're right. You're right. It is real. And you know, people who's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's just not true. But they're just very simple manifestations that it's there. I mean, you can just rub your hands together
yep.
really hard
yep.
and pull them apart, and you can feel that energy moving there.
Well, you don't even have to touch them if you just rub your Just do your hands in a circular motion about maybe an inch or so apart. You can feel
mm-hmm.
it.
Right. Your question was, I don't have a website. And I do understand, because there are different forms of Reiki. You know, different people teach, there's the form which is, that I learned, which is from a Japanese person. But really, I mean, Reiki was clearly around during the time for Kemet. You know, you just look at people who actually put it on paper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what they say, it's like when the human body for this planet was designed, Reiki was incorporated into our genetic coding as a birthright for people. We all were born with it, they just called it something else back in the times of Kemet. But you can't pay attention to the things that people's cultures and things attach to the truth.
My concern is a lot of people out there who are ripping folks off, claiming to be Reiki masters, and they're selling. I don't have a problem with people providing information or what have you, and there is a cost to it, so you want to recoup your costs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these folks are just ripping people off.
And you're right. I remember when I first started doing Reiki classes, you know, level one classes, and I was doing it for free because it's free. I mean, give me
I
a
know.
Break. We're talking
I know.
About
the universe.
Right. And, you know, there were other people that were calling and telling me I shouldn't do it, that I shouldn't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're messing it up for
it
the rest of us. Yeah.
Because, you know, life took away from other Reiki people who
mm-hmm.
were making a
yep,
living that
yep.
way. And I can understand somebody making a living and people paying for knowledge. But be fair.
You're right.
Because
right.
truly, it is free. Anybody can do it. Anywhere, anytime, the things that you might learn to enhance that ability or to teach you how to focus it, how to make it the best experience that you can, you know, all right, you want to pay for somebody's time, fine. But let's be reasonable about it.
But that's what the master said. He said, freely you've received, freely give. Now, obviously,
right.
we live in a culture where you have to quote unquote make your living, but you can't gouge people. You know,
that's true. That's always a dilemma. I tend to I just charge nominal fee. What it would cost me to do it, to prepare the literature, time or whatever. But it's always reasonable. There are people there. Actually, there's level one Reiki. There's level two, where you learn the Reiki symbols or how to do them, how to make them in your head, and level three, which is masters, which actually was telling you how to teach Reiki and how to pass the attunement to other Reiki students so they can become masters.
Yeah, do you have to be certified? Is there a certifying body for that?
Well, there's no real when I say real certifying body, in that there's not like the AMA
mm-hmm.
or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Mm-hmm. There are probably some, Reiki schools and Reiki systems, you know, they people have their bodies of things that they would require for you to get a certificate in their particular type or at their particular school. But to my knowledge, there's not a real certificate. Like, I was certified by the person that taught me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was what she believed to be a bona fide, I don't even want to use the word bona fide, but the way that would allow me to teach Reiki my way. But I had what I needed. I had the principles that I needed to do it. You know, I knew how to do the symbols, I knew how to make it work, I knew how to pass an attunement. And so I got a certificate that said I had done this, but to my knowledge, it's not one. But I'm sure there are some that will say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
especially
it's not,
like,
I mean,
the Japanese, if you've gone through that Japanese system, what's the name? Yoshui, Yokoshui?
Mikhail Yoshui.
Well,
you're right. Some of them were just so deep into it, and they were just so secretive, and you couldn't say the symbols, or you couldn't pass them on, you couldn't tell people, and the secretiveness of it caused it to started being confused because people couldn't remember. You know, if you weren't supposed to write it down, everybody had their interpretation of this is how I remembered it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just very, now that there are people who came out and do, there are books where you can see the symbols,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's clarity in that. Everybody is kind of like on the same page. And like, you know, we've said before, these are universal symbols. I mean, the universe didn't put them out here to have them be a secret. So I don't have a problem with that at all.
Okay, give us the URL for the 12/21/12 event, and you have a phone number there. Now,
yes.
This is internet radio, so people all over the world can hear it. So there'll probably be some listeners who can easily get to the venue. So give us the date,
okay.
Time, and the location,
okay.
Of the venue.
Okay, the date of the event is December 21st, 2012, and it's at the Cafe Mills.
Now, where is that? Is that, because I know where Green and Upsell is, there's a church there, and there used to be the train station that there's a little
and
cafe.
And that's where it is.
Oh, okay, so they changed,
the
it used to be the final... it used to be train stop or something. They've changed that.
It used to be called points of
point.
Destination.
Yeah, point of destination. Right. Yeah.
Yes, it's called Cafe Mills.
Okay. Yeah, I have something in front of me. It's Cafe Mills. Starts at 7 p.m. 6460 Green Street, and.
It's at 60
Green Street.
Yeah, 6460 Green Street. That's a Green Street at Upper in Mount Airy.
Okay, and now, yeah, because that's important because Philadelphia has about three different Green Streets.
Yeah, it's Green Street and Mount Airy, 6460 Green Street at Green and Upshill in Mount Airy. It's from 7 p.m. to 1 a.m., and we're asking people to wear your royal whites.
Okay.
We're treating this just like, it's, you know, it's a momentous occasion. So we say adorn in royal whites.
Okay.
So it's $35. And the evening does include a concert, and it includes gourmet high energy foods, jazz diva Khadija Renee, vocal visionary Noel, an international songstress Coco Soul, and the Chocolate Sun Band, and our lecture from Nathaniel Bracey called "The Pyramid Legacy Revealed in 2012."
Okay.
You can buy tickets at the Green Street location, 6460 Green Street, at the Beauty Coliseum, which is 1118 South Street, at the Rasa Salon at 62 Mannheim Street, or online at www.phillyaces, that's PHILLYACES, phillyaces.com, or you can call 267-971-9066.
All right, give that phone number again. And
okay.
For people who, remember, who live in close proximity, who want to come to a cultural and spiritual and psychic event like this, they may not live in Philadelphia, so it would probably be better for them to purchase it online. So give
online.
The URL
yes.
again and the phone number.
Okay, I'm giving you the online ticket place. That's www.phillyaces, PHILLYACES.com. And for information, either you can call about vending or you can call about where to purchase a ticket or how we can get you a ticket. And that number is 267-971-9066.
All right.
So, Junius, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you. I
enjoyed talking about all of these things. It's just so great to have a conversation on such a high level with you.
Well, yeah, I didn't know how much time you had, so that's why. But I knew I've been trying to get you for over a year to talk about Reiki. So,
right. Well, we can come back and do some other things on Reiki because it's just a lot. It's so much more.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll do that. There are no coincidences in the universe, so it wasn't coincidental that I bumped into you the other day at the
that's right.
at the ASCAD conference.
That's right. Yes, there are no coincidences. But I just want to also mention we're also having a silent auction with David Lawrence. You may know David.
Oh yeah,
His wonderful work. Well, David is going to be having a silent auction at this.
In fact, his gallery is not that far from there. He's up there
right.
on Germantown and Green.
He
used to be on
Harvey
Street.
Yes, he's still
there,
yes. Yeah, he's right there on, I forget the name of the street, but it's right.
It used to
right
be Harvey Street.
Harvey
or
Street,
yeah,
Harvey
right,
Street,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's right there on Harvey Street, and he is going to be a participant. His paintings are going to be, hey, it's just going to be just beautiful. And I hope you and your lovely wife can come.
All right, well, I'll see. I'll make an effort, you know, because I definitely want to be in this number, you know,
right.
12, 21, 12.
Yes, right. But, okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Peace.
Diversity is a place that no army with artillery invades.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network
with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try